ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
One way or another, NATO's pretty kaput, but the idea that Donald Trump would sort of officially say, well, we're walking away, would just have the most dire ramifications for all of Europe and the rest of us.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find it on the ABC Listen app.
Well, it's official. The Liberal Party has a new leader. Angus Taylor has comfortably claimed the title from Susan Lee in the Liberal leadership ballot, saying this was a change or die moment for the party. And Victorian moderate and staunch Angus Taylor supporter Jane Hume beat out Ted O'Brien for the deputy leadership. Susan Lee isn't just leaving the leadership chair as the party's first and only woman leader. She's actually leaving the parliament altogether, forcing a by-election in her seat of Farrer. And that is a big challenge for Angus Taylor and a big test with One Nation contesting the seat. So we're next for the Liberal Party. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Claire Armstrong.
And Claire, it's finally happened. It's been a drawn-out process, but the Liberal Party has swung behind Angus Taylor. And actually, Claire, not just a bit, a lot. Remember when the numbers were meant to be tight? They weren't tight at the end.
Yeah, 34-17. I mean, in a party room of 51, it doesn't take many people to switch over for it to look like a landslide. But in the context of this, this is a landslide. And I think a lot of it is to do with the fact that once it became obvious, particularly in the last 24 hours, that Angus Taylor was going to have the numbers to bring on a spill motion, that that would succeed. He therefore obviously had the majority backing of the part of the party room. You don't back a spill usually if you're wanting to keep the leader that you currently have. That sort of triggered this mass exodus of the middle ground of the Liberal Party. I don't mean middle ground politically necessarily, but there is sort of a middle section of that party room who aren't strongly aligned, particularly one way or the other in terms of the moderates or the right. They're either unaligned, centre-right, these kinds of things. They ultimately all ended up folding behind Angus Taylor. And I don't know if that's always necessarily the case, but it's certainly worked out in Angus's favour on this particular occasion.
Yeah, and it suited Angus Taylor's own metrics. Now, going into this, it wasn't his timing. Andrew Hastie was the one that was agitating. He ended up having to bow out because the conservative side of the Liberal Party essentially did a deal and there was more support for Angus Taylor to be the candidate. And then Angus Taylor was in this do or die position himself, which is you have to go for it now, mate, like now that the destabilisation has happened. He did, but he wanted to win a landslide, right? He wanted to win a big vote so there wouldn't be a question mark constantly over his leadership. And you know what? He got it. He got a party that did break his way. Susan Lee is leaving the parliament. I have a feeling, I cannot, you know, this is just a feeling, but it's a feeling based on just reading these people, that if it was a close vote, maybe Susan Lee wouldn't have left the parliament. It was such a strong vote against her leadership that ultimately she's made this decision. And as David Spears was telling me a bit earlier, she's on the old super scheme, so she's going to be all right. She's got the grandchildren to hang out with. I think she gave a really classy speech on her way out. Really, you know, no bitterness in her speech, even though she has the right to feel a little bitter at the undermining.
When I came to the leadership of the Liberal Party 9 months ago, my mother had just died. One of the things she said was, when something ends in sadness, don't dwell on the disappointment. Be grateful that you had it at all. So today, I want to express gratitude to the Liberal Party that I have belonged to and loved for more than half of my adult life. To the party room.
So back to Angus Taylor. He was the Conservatives' choice. He wins the ballot on the basis that they feel pretty bruised by the sniping that's been going on, so they know they've got to get behind someone in big numbers. They do it. Jane Hume comes through as the sort of moderate deputy leader. her role will be sort of, she's the teal kind of person. And what I mean by that is not that she's tealish, but she's from Melbourne. She can talk to the cities more. That's the idea there. She's also a woman. And I think that helps because Susan Lee, they've just knocked off a woman. But Angus Taylor's first press conference, I want to go to what he stands for. Did he make a case for how he would lead the party in a different way to Susan Lee?
I think over the coming months, what we are going to hear a lot from Angus Taylor is this phrase that he has, if a journalist is already starting to get sick of it, we've got to give it a few months before it registered is in the public. But this idea that he wants to protect our way of life.
Labor has undermined our standard of living and has failed to protect our way of life. And I say to Australians, the first priority of the Liberal Party now under my leadership will be to restore our standard of living and protect our way of life. Bigger government isn't the solution to Australia's problems. Australians are the solution to Australia's problems. And that means putting...
And the second component was, and our raise or protect our standard of preserve our standard of living. So that's kind of the overarching, I guess, catchphrase, if you will, of the Angus Taylor ticket. Underneath that, in his first press conference, he set out sort of a series of values propositions, a lot of what we have heard before from many leaders of the Liberal Party, Susan Lee among them. The couple that stood out to me as being of a slightly different tilt, he talked about immigration in a very specific values context, about ensuring that the types of people that are allowed into Australia essentially are not those who hate Australia. It wasn't an argument about bringing in the right skills mix, making sure that the number of people come in don't overwhelm resources, infrastructure, housing. It was all about ensuring that people with hate who come here with hate, who hate Australia, aren't allowed. And he was actually asked, well, how do you know and stop people with hate coming into the country? We didn't get a fulsome policy response, but I thought that in particular was an interesting merging of this sort of distilling of this idea that is being put very forcefully by One Nation, that there is an immigration problem in this country. It's one that to an extent even Labor have acknowledged by trying to address the growth in immigration and really, as I said before, focusing on specific skills and things like that. But it was his first big pitch in a way on that main issue that seems to be the concern for a lot of Liberals with regards to that risk of One Nation. And as you sort of asked about, there is clearly this sort of existential push and pull going on to the Liberal Party. We're talking a lot about One Nation at the moment, but as you rightly point out, PK, there's also a pull to the left,
yes,
to the middle, because half of the moderates are not in the party room anymore. Jane is one of the few that are left.
Yeah, and that's right. And some people have questioned, oh, is she a moderate anymore, because she's supported Angus Taylor now in two leadership battles. The second one he obviously won, the first he didn't, and Susan Lee ended up demoting her. I kept saying on air all day, if people have seen our coverage on ABC News, that she fought to keep net zero by 2050 loudly, and warned about the risk in the city. So I do think she's a moderate, and she's pretty passionate about some of these issues. And so I actually think she's going to play a key role in providing that ballast and balance to Angus Taylor as they try to balance these two messages. Now, you can't anymore in a world where, messages are spread on our phones instantly, speak to two different audiences. And this is their conundrum, how they appeal to teal voters and appeal to One Nation voters. I can tell you, though, because I know a little bit about their plan, that the first plan for Angus Taylor is to deal with the bleeding to the right. That is a priority, because they think, well, we're already bleeding to the moderates, to the teals, and now we're actually losing the other side too. So he wants to stem that bleeding. That's why you're hearing a tougher line on immigration. It won't just be Susan Lee's unannounced policy. He will look at it again. I know he's already had conversations about it, and that will be a focus. But he also, when I asked him in the press conference, I asked a few questions about whether they were going to be One Nation light. He said no, right?
You know, we are not seeking to be One Nation light. Absolutely not. But we respect the fact that those voters who might be thinking about One Nation, have reasons for wanting to do so, and we have to restore their confidence in us.
So wants to be more appealing, but at the same time knows that he cannot chase One Nation down a cul-de-sac. So he's trying to be the old conservative leader that stands for values that he can articulate strongly rather than being wishy-washy, which is what they say Susan Lee was. I'm not saying he's told me this, but that's the view. Whether he can do it, though, whether he's the right messenger, I still think is yet to be tested. But it's a big job, Claire. I can't see how they do it easily.
No, and the one thing that really stood out to me is, apart from that real honing in on the values component, a lot of what he was talking about was not a huge departure from where Susan Lee set herself to the things they wanted to focus on: home ownership, young people, multicultural Australia, these, you know, the mortgage belt, making sure that people have a fair go, that they get their money back, all of these kinds of touch points of the Liberal Party kind of platform that have existed in perpetuity, really, under any leader, under Dutton, under Morrison, and those that came before. So I do think that maybe Susan Lee, if she was watching the press conference, I hope she wasn't. I really do hope she was at the pub.
I wonder if she was.
I really hope she was.
I want to find out now.
Would be a bit of a head scratcher. And I agree with you that it was a very classy speech from her after the result. She didn't take any questions. I did note the one kind of drive-by, if you will, which was that in announcing that she'd be resigning from politics, she said that she thought that leaders deserved clear air, not that they always get it.
It is important that the new leader gets clear air, something that is not always afforded to leaders, but which in the present moment is more important than ever. I will be spending the next couple
of weeks. And I think that was a not so subtle reference to the reality, which is that she has not had a lot of clear air over the last 9 months, sometimes buffeted by circumstances, but often dealing with things driven by people in her own party room and in the broader coalition, whether it's the splits, doing net zero on the Nats timeline. There were these constant kind of inflection points in her own timing of when she wanted to do things and how she wanted to do things that were disrupted. And I think one of the things that I found quite interesting was this idea that she needed to have announced policies faster and been more strong. There was a constant complaint of the detractors that appeared over the last 48 hours publicly saying that they were going to be backing Angus Taylor, as if everyone had forgotten that a big part of people's unhappiness with how Peter Dutton had run the party room in the previous turn was that he wasn't consulting. And she set up these backbench committees, she set up these processes to listen and learn and reflect and make sure that the policies were reflecting what the party room wanted, what the public wanted, and it wasn't fast enough. So it's, you know, you kind of can't win sometimes.
No, she it's like, I think they saw Peter Dutton as too top down and then Susan Lee as too wishy-washy, I'm using it again, and too consultative, you know, looking at where the wind was going all the time before she made a call. Now let's see, will Angus Taylor, like, it's a hard line, will he walk that careful line? Look, you know, I think one of the main things he's going to do, I know he's spending some time with David Littleproud this weekend. He's called the Nats Whisperer by some, like that he has that great relationship with the Nationals. I think the Nationals treated Susan Lee terribly. I think David Littleproud treated her with very little respect, but clearly he's trying to rebuild the coalition in that old style, old school way to try and make them more competitive with One Nation. He is, though, in a very wickedly difficult position. And what I didn't hear from his vision was how he was going to win back metropolitan Australia. He said, you know, with the mea culpa on the taxes, that he wants to go back to, you know, the coalition having strong economic credentials. And I actually think that's wise. I think it was very strange in the last election that they went saying essentially that their taxes would be higher. Like they would repeal a tax cut, like mental, like what? What is the point of them, right? Like that is one of their main brand values. And so now he wants to return to that. He hopes that rebuilds them in the cities. But I got to say, Claire, I think one of the only things that'll help him is Labor imploding. Now, don't discount that happening to governments. They do. But, you know, like the vision stuff is going to have to be like really well executed. And we know that new opposition leaders are pretty accident prone sometimes.
Yes, and Angus Taylor himself has a bit of baggage in that regard, having obviously been a minister and been in a prominent role last term as Shadow Treasurer. Labor had attack ads literally ready to go the second that the result out of that party room was published. They feel very confidently that there is a wealth of material to draw on from his own past. So it will be difficult. I don't think he's going to get a sort of honeymoon grace period, or if he does, it will not last for very long. And I agree with you about articulating how they're going to win back voters in the cities. You know, he was specifically asked, does the party need to move to the left, to the right? I know, as you've just said, that he's obviously got to prioritise, he's prioritising the right. But he basically just said, I don't see it like that.
Well, I don't really think of it as left, right or centre. I think of it as focusing on Australians and the hard-working the challenges that hardworking Australians are facing every single day, the challenge that they are struggling to pay their bills, the challenge that they can't see a pathway for them or for their kids to own a home.
We're going to take the Liberal Party forward, not left, not right. We're not moving towards any one party. We're taking our party and the people that we want to represent forward.
And it's hard to say, we have a problem as a party, existential, the polls are terrible, if an election was held today, we may not exist. That's a pretty major problem to have identified. And to not be able to, like, sort of come up with what might be a solution, they've diagnosed a problem, and the solution sounded a lot like, we're going to keep going how we've always gone and we're going to get back to it. And I think that there are a few past Liberal leaders over the last decade who might say, yeah, we also had that idea and look how it worked out for us.
I do think that the point of difference that I really pick up from Angus Taylor is the small government, lower taxes, lower interventions, anti-tariffs, pro-globalisation. That actually makes him very old school, very small liberal economically, and that is a point of distinction. It is very different, though, than the sort of big spending, like, you know, that kind of economic nationalism that others would like to see. So it's a gamble, but it is back to their knitting, if you like. That is specific, and that is something he brings. The way he offsets it to those who would like, you know, a more sort of populist approach is on values, on immigration, being tough on that. Now, I know privately, when they were canvassing for who should be the right-wing candidate, for instance, between him and Andrew Hastie, part of the discussion was that he was not going to go quite as hard on immigration as an Andrew Hastie. I know that was part of the pitch, because they are worried about migrant communities. Like, that's the other side of this story, that you can go too far and alienate. That's the cul-de-sac thing, right? The one nation, it's a smaller group. And so he wants to go hard on it, but he probably not as hard as others that would have in the party. Believe it or not, he might be a leading conservative, but he's told his colleagues he's aware that there is a line and that it's about values, whatever that means, Australian values, who comes through the door, but equally just being careful about not overreaching.
Yeah, my assumption in that framing of people who have hate for the country shouldn't come here is probably a way of sort of a nod to this idea that there are obviously a lot of people in their base who feel that the migration mix is not what they want to see. But it potentially, and this would be a difficult message to sell, but it seems to be the one he's going to attempt, is saleable to even migrant communities, because you essentially start to set up this idea that, oh, well, the majority of you are great. Mm. You're good. Mm. You don't hate us.
Well, he told us about cappuccinos.
Yes. And we're just talking about this very narrow subset of migrants who even you don't necessarily want in your community.
Yeah, and many migrants do want to shut the door behind them.
It's a nuance that I'm would be interested to see how it plays out. I think the other point that you raise about him being a traditionalist in a lot of these economic issues will also be a challenge, because is the electorate still there? Does the electorate still care deeply about having a budget in surplus, paying down debt so that their children don't have to pay it? Or do they expect a little bit more from government these days? Is Andrew Hastie right? Do people expect the government to intervene and save their jobs and do these kinds of have these kind of populist or high spending economic policies that give them the services and the other kinds of benefits in life that they've come to expect? That will be a tough argument, I think, for him to make, but one that, you know, he obviously is going to have a crack at. There's a bit of talk that, you know, we could be back here in 6 months talking about a Tim Wilson versus Andrew Hastie leadership challenge. I mean, for my own sake, I hope not. I'm exhausted after this week alone. Never say never.
You're a bit young. I used to do them every 5 minutes.
Well, I've been in Canberra nearly 7 years, and this is my first spill in a major party. That's
well, in my decade here, I can tell you it was like, oh, another day, another challenge.
His first test is obviously going to be very soon. It's going to be the Farah by-election because we know that Susan Lee's going to be stepping down in a couple of weeks. That's going to be a very tricky contest.
Yeah, because there you'll get probably a Nationals candidate, a Liberal candidate. Remember, Susan Lee actually was the Liberal upset after Tim Fischer, who was a Nationals leader, resigned from the seat. So there's always been a little dislike that she was successful there, and she's always been very proud of winning that seat for the Liberals. And now One Nation will run. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about One Nation's polling. Well, in the seat of Farah, it will be tested, the way they run that campaign. Now, Pauline Hanson hasn't missed. She's been up talking about, this is basically, they're still flogging a dead horse, even with a new salesman in Angus Taylor. So One Nation will... It's almost like they are the rival at the moment rather than the Labor Party to the Liberals. Again, that's a danger though.
Absolutely. And the other factor in Farah is just last year at the election, an independent ran and got 20-odd% of the vote, the primary, you know, that sort of orange rural, you know, they're not quite teal, but the Helen Haynes kind of mould of a rural independent. It is very possible that we could see a four-horse race, and the preference flows will ultimately determine who ends up winning that seat. And that is also going to be interesting because, as we've talked endlessly about since this One Nation surge in the polls, we don't have a lot of data on what happens to preferences after people put One Nation, or this many people put One Nation first. So it will be quite an interesting test case. And if the Liberals do fare poorly, I think it will be very hard for Angus Taylor to distance himself from that result. And that's not what you want in your first couple of weeks and months as a new opposition leader.
Yeah. What a parting gift from Susan Lee. Here is my regional electorate where I already knocked off the Nationals. Now it will be contested by a wider field of right-wingers. And you, Angus Taylor, must defend the brand. Good for you. Good luck. I wonder if there might be even, I don't know, a backlash. You could really run a campaign of they got rid of your local member because they knifed her. I can imagine all sorts of shenanigans going on. Okay, Claire, you say this is your first in 7 years. How's it been for you?
It's been kind of everything as expected. I mean, the best and or worst part was being crammed into a tiny pen a couple metres by a couple metres with about 50 of my colleagues in the Federal Press Gallery screaming at pollies as they walk past. No, it's been instructive. I'm clearly losing my ability to speak.
Oh, mate.
But I think there will be a vindication of sorts of Susan Lee when the period that she took over the Liberal Party is reflected on in the broader context of wherever the party lets up, that she identified the groups that the party needed to win back in terms of, you know, the very obvious, but she identified them, she set them out. Did she get a chance to do it? No. If we see a resurgent Liberal Party who ultimately reaches out to those groups, I think she could be vindicated. But obviously she's sailing off into the sunset to enjoy a bit of free time with her kids and grandkids.
Yeah, and she has big family and I'm sure they want her home, and I'm sure this has been a very bruising part of her career, although she's been in politics for a very long time, since the Howard government. But, you know, like you got to hand it to her. She smashed a very thick glass ceiling in the Liberal Party and that will, you can't take that from her. That's it for politics now for today. But just a little reminder, Claire, I'm reminding you, Claire, and also our listeners, that on Monday night, I've got my four corners on the realignment of the right. I mean, timing is everything, isn't it? You know, it's a much bigger story about the changes in right-wing politics and what it's all about and what people find appealing. That is on ABC TV Monday night. David Spears will be back in the feed for Insiders on Background tomorrow, speaking with Liberal Party Vice President Fiona Scott. Fran and I will be back together on Sunday for the Mardi Gras Fair Day show in Sydney. It's at 1 p.m. at Victoria Park. If I haven't collapsed as I'm finishing my four corners, you will see me. I hope to be standing. See you, Claire.
See ya.